Ms. Schaffner, do you want to summarize for us what we have kind of gleaned from the record and from the correspondence from the CSD as to what their outstanding due process issues are?
Yeah, and I apologize if I'm being dense or not understanding or not fairly characterizing. I will certainly expect that you will correct me if I get any of this wrong, Mr. Seitz. But my understanding from your latest briefing submitted on the 22nd, and this is when it finally started to gel for me what the nature of what I think your objection, procedural and substantive due process objections are, is that you believe that the there is an that the ACLC is somehow holding the CSD itself liable for all the discharges of individual dischargers, that the CSD does not control the waste of within the district. That is that though they're in the that parts of the CSD are not in the prohibition zone, parts of it are. I'm not sure if I got that right, but your basic argument is you think the ACL holds the CSD liable for discharges over which it has no control.
That's correct. As you may recall, and I've had many fine discussion with your board regarding this very issue as I flipped up the prohibition zone and kept trying to advise the board that it is inappropriate to hold the community service district responsible for the violation of the prohibition, and I still believe the 00131 is based on the general prohibition of the time schedule order to sewer the prohibition zone. I don't want to mix apples and oranges here, but I kept getting the idea that what the ACL complaint was aimed at, and I can quote Mr. Briggs's letter to the district transmitting ACL complaint, was the concept that because the district didn't build the wastewater treatment project for the entire prohibition zone, that somehow the amount of penalties, when you take a look at the original and maybe the ongoing, because I don't know how many versions of the worksheet are out there anymore, but the whole concept was based on these horrendous discharges from the entire prohibition zone. And my concern was is that the prosecution staff was trying, attempting to say, because the district didn't build the wastewater treatment project to sewer the whole prohibition zone, that this $11 million that we were that was before your board was aimed at that issue, the failure to build the wastewater treatment project. Therefore, you are going to be held responsible for all these individual discharges with, and you'll see a PowerPoint on this within the prohibition zone. I kept trying to say there's no nexus without a plant, without having a wastewater treatment plant in process, you know, up and serving the community. There was no way that the district A could be responsible because they're only an individual discharger, and B they could not pass on the fines within the prohibition zone because there was the prohibition zone itself was an empty shell. Now, I have, since I raised this, we've had two correspondents back from the prosecution team, I believe, clarifying this. One is their rebuttal brief, and I'm going to read to you. It says that the district argues that the complaint should be stricken because Water Code Section 13301 applies to persons who discharge waste, and therefore the district cannot be held accountable for discharges of waste from individual dischargers within the prohibition zone, as alleged in the ACL complaint and the proposed worksheet for assessment. The prosecution team's response: neither the complaint nor the worksheet, and I disagree with this completely, alleges any such thing. The basis for the four cease and desist orders, which I believe are not at issue here, the time schedule order and the ACE on the ACL complaint are the district's own discharges. which is basically the Bay Ridge subdivision, Vista del Oro, and the fire station. I think this is further clarified.
What does that then satisfy your concern?
Well, as long as the chair, this is resolved this way. I hate to be sitting up here saying, putting our position, and if the chair says you're right, you're only going to be held responsible for those three discharges, then I'll be satisfied. The third, and I'm reading from the page 35, I think, of the first transcript, the first December 1st transcript. The third thing is the basis for assessing a penalty under 00131 versus assessing a penalty on the basin plan prohibition. No matter what we base the penalty on, it is based on the district's discharges at Bay Ridge Estates, Vista del Oro, and the fire department. It is not based on the basin-wide prohibition or discharges of other residents other than the residents in these two subdivisions. Now, if that is the chair and this board's position, then I believe my substantive due process argument is resolved.
Okay, well, let me say this. The board doesn't have a position with that. This is staff's recommendation. I will tell you that was always my understanding in reading the ACL, that they were recommending under one of their two theories that you would be held responsible for only the discharges from your own facilities and not from the community at large. So that's always been my understanding, and not everyone else in the community.
Perhaps we could let Ms. Oken clarify this for the prosecution team, but my understanding was the same as the chairman's, and that the citation to the factual threat, water quality and health and safety risks posed by ongoing unsewered discharges from the rest of the community within the district were a factual context and implication that is a water quality context for the failure to get the sewer built, not a basis for assessing a violation. The enforcement policy adopted by the state board, as well as the statutes, require that the board consider water quality implications as well as many other things. So it was my understanding was that was given as context for that discussion. Is that correct, Ms. Oken?
That's correct, and in fact, the next 2.5 paragraphs after the rebuttal citation that Mr. Seitz just read says exactly that those are factors for the board to consider in determining the amount.
So just so I have this clear, because this has a major impact on what I've been trying to achieve here, and maybe it's just my own misunderstanding and my discussion with the board, is that the district is only being held responsible here today for three discharges: Bay Ridge, Vista del Oro, and the fire department.
Under one of two theories in the ACL.
But we're not being held responsible for the general discharge within the prohibition zone for the failure in violation of 8313.
Well, in violation of the basin plan prohibition.
That's it. Okay.
Okay.
That's what I'm.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So if that's the ruling, then.
Well, you know what? It's not a ruling because I don't know what we're going to end up doing. But let me say this. Due process is notice and an opportunity to be heard. You're getting an opportunity to be heard on all of these issues. Then this goes more to the notice issue, I believe, in your argument. And so if the board comes up with something later that maybe doesn't jive with what your notion is of what notice should have been, then you've got an issue at that point. It may not be with this board. It would be with some appellate review.
I feel like if I say anything, I'm going to be interpreted as concurring with you, and I don't want to sound. I don't, as I said my the other day, I don't believe in arguing with the judge
Mr. Seitz, I won't take it personally
anywhere.
If you want to concur with me.
Okay, I don't. I appreciate your humor. I don't concur with that statement. I think notice is a key to process, and it's certainly a key to the district's position to know precisely what discharges and that we are being held accountable for. And I've continually made the argument that we can't be held accountable for the discharges of other residents. Your prosecution team's rebuttal seems to confirm that, and their direct testimony before this board seems to confirm that.
Okay. All right, let's go on to the second then.
Does that dispose of all of your due process objections, Mr. Seitz?
No, there's one more that I listed in my...
Okay.
Okay, and let me see if I... I was afraid I may have collapsed them or teased them out when they should have been collapsed them. Do I understand correctly that your second objection to due process, motion to strike based on due process obligations... And here I'm a little less clear. Is it because the penalties might affect the budgets of the subdivisions within the CSD, or is it based on an allegation that your equal protection rights are violated by not assessing penalties against those subdivisions within the CSD? I'm not real clear on that.
Thank you for the opportunity. First of all, I want to make sure that there's a clear understanding. We haven't waived our other procedural due process issues that we raised during the December 1st and December 2nd hearing. These are the ones that I intended to raise prior to closing, and doesn't necessarily reflect back. This isn't an accumulative restating all my due process objections that I had during the during the evidentiary hearing.
First, to be clear, Mr. Seitz,
yes.
That is not our understanding, at least as the chairman and I have discussed this since that hearing. There has been no citations to law or fact or argument to flesh out any of the general prior objections you just tried to preserve. We can't address it. The board cannot give you a remedy when no cause of action has been stated. So if you want to abandon those objections, you can have that. You can do so. If you want to support those objections, you've had, by my count, at least 3 written opportunities and 2 days of hearing to do that. This is the 3rd day. So if you really want it to be considered, I would suggest that you just lay it out there now.
Okay, thank you. First of all, What my concern was is now that when you're enforcing the second part of this, which is the basin plan prohibition, which is the violation of 8313 at Vista Del Oro subdivision, the Bay Rib subdivision, and the fire department, that as a matter of process, that you need to follow the processes of either a cease and desist order or a cleanup and abatement order in order to give those subdivisions and those septic tank systems the ability to provide a remedy. In other words, you turn around and you say to yourself, okay, we have these, and you'll see these on the PowerPoint, you're going to see these 3 operations that are run by the district pursuant to zones of benefit that have their own separate budgets that have that are managed as independent little zones to operate, that what's going on here is that you're finding them directly for violations of 83 through the district. I want to make sure that there's a distinction there, for direct violations of 8313. And the point that I wanted to make and clear is that A, it's been the history of this board. It's articulated in the regional water quality, state water resource control board, state water resource quality board's enforcement policies that and the prior actions of this board, that you've always thought enforcement against individual dischargers, which are these three organizations, through cease and desist orders or cleanup and abatement orders, because they come with a specific timeline. If the regional board is concerned about those discharges, and I'm not saying you shouldn't be, that the way to go about doing that is not alleging a direct violation of 8313, but in the alternative is to issue cease and desist orders that gives this board, your staff, and the LOCSD staff the opportunity to come up with a fix. You're sitting here under one theory saying we're going to fine you folks those zones of benefit $11 million, and maybe now it's $32 million, looking at the what got emailed to us late last night, for these discharges when the very fix is less than $11 million. And it just seems to me that the correct way and the historical method that this board has used and is what's recommended in the policies is to issue individual cease and desist orders or cleanup and abatement orders to give the discharger, being the district, the ability to address those individual discharges and not lump them with a direct violation of 8313.
Mr. Chair, this board did that 6 years ago. 6 years ago, in 1999, the board issued cease and desist orders for those four discharges. And those cease and desist orders had time schedules in them. They were based on the solution that the district proposed to resolve those discharges, which was to build the treatment plant. A year later, the board adopted the time schedule order, in part because the district said that it needed to extend the schedules in the cease and desist order. And the board included an extended schedule in the time schedule order. The four discharges aren't separate entities. The cease and desist orders, I agree, were not alleging violations of the cease and desist orders, but those were the orders that were the basis for the time schedule order. The discharger named in the time schedule order is the district because it owns and operates the four facilities. I don't know how to make that any more clear.
Mr. Seitz, I don't see this as really a due process issue anyway. I think that you'll have opportunity to argue this further. If you feel that some other remedy is appropriate, you can argue that to the board. But I think what's in the ACL is going to stand at this point and not get amended. And you can take issue with what staff is recommending, as a remedy for what's going on and what you think the board should or should not do. But I don't see it as germane to something that the board itself can fix at this point with the pleading or the process.
Mr. Chairman, if I can point out one other point for the record.
Go ahead.
Of the four law firms that the CSD has engaged to advise or participate in this matter, it's gotten a little confusing because now I have before me a petition filed, actually a renewed renewal, reactivation of the petition filed 5 years ago on the TSO by the CSD. Mr. Grimm filed on behalf of the CSD, and I believe Mr. Seitz submitted that as an attachment to one of his recent submittals to the chair. The points and authorities by Mr. Grimm specifically says that the district consequently can only be held accountable for those four service areas over which it has control and from which it discharges wastewater. There seems to be some tension between what you're saying. You're saying that the CSD should not be held accountable for the discharges from these facilities, and Mr. Grimm is saying that it can.
No. Well, I'm sorry. Maybe I misstated. I think that the district, under my interpretation of the rules, is a discharger for the purposes of the 8313 for the three septic tanks systems that it operates for Vista Del Oro, Bay Ridge, thank you, and the fire station. I'm in complete agreement. I just But those are the only discharges that we can be held responsible for.
Okay.
And the way that the board has traditionally and consistent with the state water. Oh, yeah, I got to spell this out, state water. Quality control board enforcement policies are that you issue against individual discharges either cease and desist orders or cleanup and abatement orders. And
okay, I don't think we have a due process violation here. I think it goes more towards your argument as to what might be an appropriate remedy for what's going on, and you'll have opportunity to, you know, restate that again during closing.
Okay. Then picking up on Ms. Scheffner's other issues, we have always raised the objection as to the timing of these hearings, if I have to restate them now so everybody's clear on them, on the basis of notice and opportunity to be heard. And I quoted a section, it's an old case law that says the amount of due process that an agency is entitled to or anybody is entitled to is directly related to the penalties. And we've continually been handling this hearing on an expedited basis and with a threat of an $11 million fine. And I've raised that in the past. I want to make sure if I'm supposed to renew it now, that it be renewed now. And so that is being renewed. I've also raised issues on the chair's ruling that our cross-examination of opposing witnesses was going to be deducted from our case in chief time. I've raised that on numerous occasions. I've always been cited back to an email that Mr. McClendon sent to the Ms. Scheffner in response to some questions, which basically stated when they asked these questions that we somehow stipulated to 2 hours. I have reviewed that email, and I can find it in my binder here. Two things. One is we gave no time for cross-examination. We only gave time, and we estimated 2 hours for at least 2 hours for our case in chief. And as far as authority goes, I want to cite to you Government Code Section 11513B. Each party shall have these rights to call and examine witnesses, to introduce exhibits, to cross-examine opposing witnesses on any matter relevant to the issues, even though that matter was not covered. And it just seems to me the continual indication that when we were cross-examining or giving our ability to cross-examine the prosecution team's witnesses, we always had the clock running on our case in chief. And if I have to continue to raise these objections, I'm raising them again right now, and I'm citing you the California Government Code that addresses that section.
Okay, Mr. Seitz, was there any witnesses that you were not able to cross-examine on the December 1st and 2nd hearings?
Absolutely. And the reason why I say that is this, is that you put tremendous strain on myself and the other attorneys up here to cross-examine witnesses to figure out what questions you can ask them and what questions you shouldn't, because the time is ticking against your case in chief. And I believe, you know, that I know I would have had additional questions back then. If I'm required now to re-raise these issues, I need to make sure they're clear on the record that by me just doing the substantive and procedural due process motions that we've already went through, that I haven't somehow waived those objections.
Well,
I don't want it clear I haven't.
You haven't waived those. My concern was that I had given you all the time that you requested through December 1st and 2nd. I didn't hear anything from you that, gee, I really need some more time because I had some more questions for Mr. Thompson or Mr. Briggs. So I'm asking you now, do you have any specific questions or areas of examination that you felt you were not able to cover December 1st or 2nd that you would like to revisit during this hearing today?
Well, I think the answer to that is yes.
Okay, and could you, with some specificity, tell me who you need to examine and how much time you need for each of those witnesses?
Their prosecution team. First of all, there's prosecution team witnesses that we would we'd want to call. I can't give you a timeline. I would much prefer to have my notes from my meetings for the evidentiary portion of this, but I'm sure I can go back to my office and resurrect them. You know how this works, and I'm sorry being flippant here. From a lawyer's perspective, a question begs another question. Every lawyer knows that. For to sit back and say, how much time are you going to need to cross-examine witnesses, in itself places a limitation on our ability to cross-examine. I have no intentions of filibustering this hearing, so on and so forth, but and I don't know. So I think that we would also, just as a side note, we did want to have Mr. Miller come back up and make a presentation on nitrates because this isn't quite exactly what the chair had in mind, I think, in his other emails to us, but we have come into subsequent information regarding nitrates in the groundwater basin due to the most recent studies. It's a very short presentation, but we would also want the opportunity to put that on as an informational item.
Well, that's not cross-examination, right?
No,
that's your own witness.
I agree.
And
I
he
agree.
Was here on the 1st and 2nd. Michael?
No.
Oh,
yeah.
Daniel.
Mr. Chair, I have to register an objection to going into more cross-examination to entertaining this idea that due process has been violated here. I think the record will show that the chair provided extra time to the district, that when the chair asked if the district had any more questions for witnesses, the district did not. That part of the hearing was closed, and I think it should stay closed.
And as a refresher, Mr.
Is that
Chairman?
The sense of the board? Mr. Hayashi, Mr. Shalcross,
could Mr.
Thomas, Mr. Jeffries?
Could right. Mr. Thomas maybe refresh our memory on how much time you actually gave last time, just so we're all current?
Extra time?
Yeah. Okay. I know. Initially, the chairman said 2 hours for the total case.
2 hours for both parties.
But there were numerous additional times presented as Mr. Press, just as Dr. Press.
Approximately 30 minutes was added.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I don't argue with the generosity of the chair to extend time. I want everybody to understand that. But the fact of the matter is these generosities were welcomed. But they came after the witnesses were sent down, and they had more to do with our case in chief. You may recall that the limitations on cross-examining Mr. Polhemus directly based on the extended timelines. But I guess the bottom line is I don't argue with the notion that the chair extended my time to put the case in chief on. I don't want to make sure that everybody's clear on that.
Okay. And I know that there was an argument, Mr. Seitz, that you had wanted Mr. Grimm to be available to participate in this, and I guess you're waiving that specific objection because I don't see him here.
Right.
He was your expert lawyer.
Right. And and I appreciate, and that was part of the time, as you may recall, for extending this out, we had, and I appreciate that from the chair, we've had extensive time to review the pleadings and our response and our closing argument with Mr. Grimm, and I appreciate the opportunity that the chair gave in extending the meeting for that purposes.
Let me say this. I'm sensitive to what my colleagues want me to do and want done with this issue. I'm also sensitive to your concerns about having sufficient time to examine, you know, witnesses or cross-examine witnesses. I'm also very aware that judges and hearing officers can and do limit the amount of time that a party has to put on a case and to go through witnesses. I would like to know if you can be specific with a time frame and specific witnesses that you feel you really needed to cover, and this is really an important part of your case that you felt was really set aside because of the time constraint. And I would like to hear what the request is, if there was some specific witnesses, and I don't just mean the prosecution team, but specific witnesses and as specific an amount of time as possible. Because I can't give you an unlimited amount of time for cross-examination. That I'm not going to do.
Mr. Chair, could I suggest maybe a five-minute break so I could consult with the other two attorneys on my side so I could come back and give you that information?
Okay, we can do that. Let me finish with this category we're calling due process right here so we can cover that. Ms. Schaffner, is there anything else left? Well, there was another issue, I think, about the budgeting and funding sources, and you felt that I think there was a due process issue that you might be assessed a penalty that would create a problem because it would be pulling on sub-districts or something of that nature.
Well, I don't know if that was more argument or substantive or procedural due process. The issue that I wanted to make, and I'm going to continue to make, is that the district operates zones of benefit. You can't sit back and hold these zones of benefit responsible or find them to the tune that the or do otherwise than through a cease and desist order or a cleanup and abatement order, hold these subdivisions responsible for the entire violation of the prohibition zone or the entire alleged violation of 00131.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, why is that a due process
issue?
Well,
I would agree with that, and I think Mr. Seitz has kind of tendered that as more maybe of an argument than a true due process issue, and that's the way I'll receive it. So you'll have opportunity to address the board on that during closing. Okay, I think that kind of covers those due process issues.
I didn't have any others in my notes, unless the CSD had something. Okay.
Okay, why don't we take a quick break? And you said 5 minutes is enough?
I just need to step out in the hallway.
Okay, so I'm going to try to get us back here right at 10 after the hour so we can move forward. Okay, folks, let's take your seats. It's 10 after. Would everyone please take their seats?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Seitz indicated to us during the break that the reason they want to put Rob Miller back on is to present the most recent sampling data, which shows that nitrate levels have actually gone up and that testimony will only take about 5 to 10 minutes. And if that's the case and that's all he's going to testify about, then prosecution staff joins his request to present that evidence.
Okay. If there's no objection, then?
No objections.
That's fine.
Okay.
Before we get to the issue that you guys just deliberated about and over, let me just mention this to the public. There's going to be no public comment period today. This was a continued hearing. Public comment was had, I believe, on December 2nd, and we had sufficient public comment at that point in time. There's only a little bit of additional new testimony today dealing with the issue of compliance, non-compliance, subsequent to December 2nd. And so in order that we keep things moving along and not open this up to another couple of hours of public comment, we will have no public comment today.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Maybe better clarify between public comment and public forum, because public forum is on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Jeffries. I do have a copy of the agenda. And we have public forum, which would be that any member of the public can address the board on anything other than this agenda item. So, and that will be sometime after 2 p.m. today. All right, that is public forum, not public comment on this item. Okay, so Mr. Seitz and Mr. Onstott, would you like to tell us what you came up with?
Yeah, first of all, we've agreed we're both very hungry. But secondly of all, I'm sorry for the humor, but I'm just part of me.
But do you notice how it really keeps you focused?
It does.
I mean, it's true. You really only need a little bit of water and some crackers, and you'll be able to go the whole day.
Your constitution is much different than mine, then, Mr. Chair. We would like to call back Darren Pohemus, both Mr. Onstott and Mr. McClendon. I believe that would be somewhere between 15 to 20 minutes. I would like to call back Mr. Briggs. Myself and Mr. Onstott would like to call back Mr. Briggs, and we estimate that to be 20 minutes. Additionally, if we're going to break for lunch, I do think that Mr. Miller's testimony is going to be very short, but I think somewhat relevant, and basically as what Ms. Oaken has pointed out, it's the latest nitrate samplings. I think it's, what, two charts?
Three slides.
They're going to be very quick. But they do, to some extent, contradict his testimony that he presented to the – I can represent you. I've seen the slides. They somewhat contradict his testimony that he gave. The district is in no position, nor do they want to be in any position, where they would lead this board or your staff to conclude that we had new information and we withheld it from the board without giving an opportunity to present it.
Okay, let's look at the request for essentially 20 minutes for these two categories. Normally, the examination of a witness is done by one lawyer. Was your suggestion that you were going to split that up between lawyers?
It would be 20 minutes combined. My issues are somewhat different than Mr. Onstott, Mr. McClendon's, and so I have no interest in, for myself, that's why Mr. McClendon and Mr. Onstott would be in charge of Mr. Pohemus, and myself and Mr. Onstott would be the cross-examination. Obviously, each of us have a little different expertise and a little bit greater knowledge of the precise areas that we want to cross-examine. I don't want to find myself cross-examining into an area that I know very little about.
Okay, let's look at this then. Starting with, how much time do we have coming into today, Michael?
40 minutes.
Okay, so
40 minutes for the CSD.
Okay, so the CSD has already 40 minutes, and I mean the prosecution team has, I think, an abundance of time, and it just keeps on growing. So what you're asking for essentially is an additional about 40 minutes to add on top of the 40 minutes that you have.
That's correct.
Okay, and then some time for the three slides, like 10 minutes.
We're hoping. Okay. I'll let Rob. Rob, how much time do you think you need for those three slides? 10 would be great.
Okay.
Could we have an offer of proof on the cross-examination of Mr. Briggs and Mr. Polhemus?
Okay. Mr. Seitz, Mr. Onstad, do you want to?
Well, why there is an offer of proof requested, I don't know. By definition, the offer of proof is that the scope of cross-examination is the same scope as that on direct. So if what they're asking for is, do we want to lay the questions out so the prosecution can prepare the witness, we decline to do that. We will commit, however, to keeping our cross-examination questions within the scope, for example, Mr. Polhemus in his position with the State Board in administering the SRF, and Mr. Briggs' function as the XO of the board.
Well, but is the scope going to be solely with areas that you did not cover before? Okay. If that is so, then I think that would be okay. If there's areas that you didn't get to cover, I just don't want you to be going over prior testimony and rehashing that.
I agree, Mr. Chair. One other point of clarification. You mentioned that we had 40 minutes. Is that exclusive of closing, correct?
No, that was the closing that was given to you before.
So it is still the chair's view that each side will be given a total of 40 minutes closing?
No. What we have coming into this is
40 minutes
is what the CSD had coming into this, and how much time?
About 2 hours and 15 minutes, I think.
Two hours and 15 minutes is what they had accumulated based on additional time being given to both parties. So prosecution team has 2.5. Was it 2.5?
2 hours and 15 minutes, I believe.
Okay, 2 hours, 15 minutes.
I think it was 153 minutes?
Okay.
2 hours and 33 minutes.
However, I believe Ms. Okun had told us that she didn't think she was going to use half that.
Right. No, that I understand. I just want to be clear how much time, because the agenda said each side had 40 minutes for closing. I just want to be sure that in the tally that you're doing, Mr. Chair, if that's inclusive, that number that you just gave is inclusive or exclusive of closing?
Here's what I will do with this, and we'll see whether my colleagues want to go along with this at this point. But I would give you the essentially you're looking for 50 additional minutes plus the 40 you had before. That would be 90 minutes, an hour and a half. I'll let you divide it up any way you want, okay? If you decide you want to shift that around, take from your closing to the examination, I'll leave that up to you. I won't interfere with that. But I'm going to be pretty hard and fast this time that number is going to stick. And I'm not going to be adding any time to it unless there is something absolutely extraordinary that develops that nobody could anticipate. Now, is Mr. Polhemus available? Is he on...
After I got the request from Ms. Schaffner to ensure that the witnesses would be available, I did confirm that he'd be in his office today, and he asked that I follow up with him when we had more information about what time or whether he'd actually be needed, and I didn't have any further information. So we had overlapping vacations, I think. He said he would be in all day. He's maybe at lunch
right now.
Well,
it sounds like we need to get let me first deal with this. How does the board feel about allowing the district the additional time it's requested? Dr. Press?
Well, another 50 minutes, I don't really see the need for that, but I'll defer to you, Mr. Chair. If you want to call it 90 minutes total and be firm about that, because I think we do need to get to the point where we deliberate and we do need to close this hearing. So if that's your recommendation, I'll go along with it, but as long as it's really firm.
All right, Mr. Jeffries?
Well, Mr. Chair, I agree with Dr. Press, but I have a different caveat to this. Is the attorney's saying that they're not trying to filibuster, but to continue to ask for more and more time. You've been extremely liberal on the time that you have given them to extend them the extra time that they've asked for, and I think there has to be a time and a place that we say enough is enough. It's the chair's prerogative. If you want to allow the additional time, I'll go along with the chair's prerogative. But I will say I'm not interested in going beyond that time. I think that's more than sufficient. They've basically used a lot of their times reiterating points of their presentation several times, and they could have curtailed some of that information and been more direct in what they were really trying to point to us.
Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Press and Mr. Jeffries.
And Mr. Hayashi?
I will agree also.
Okay.
But let's just hold it at the 90.
Okay. All right. So you've got a total of 90 minutes. Use it any way you wish. And somehow we should let Mr. Polhemus know that he is going to be needed. And is there someone that can you send him an email?
Yeah, actually I can.
Okay.
Can we?
Do we have a time estimate for
We're going to put Rob on now, or do you want to?
Well, we have some other issues. Okay. Unfortunately, we haven't completed yet that are preliminary in matter. And you know what? I think we can go right into that extra time that you've been granted if you want to then put him on, and we'll get Mr. Polhemus on. And that might be a half hour from now.
10 minutes.
Oh, he's right here. Okay, wonderful. All right.